heard from St. Paul's epistle on married love is heard so very often, and it is so easily misunderstood. In fact, it is an absolute goldmine of misunderstanding, both for the fundamentalist conservatives and for the radical feminists. The fundamentalists would have us believe that Paul today is advocating an old-fashioned, archaic social structure. And the radical feminists would have us believe essentially the same thing. And they would have us reject Paul. And yet if Paul were to be interviewed today, he would insist, as strongly as he ever did back in his own time, for the need for unselfish love in marriage. But he would not argue that the family life customs be transferred from one period of history to another period of history. We must remember that Paul was a product of his own age, just as we are products of our own age. Perhaps he did not realize way back then all the different periods of history that would still come after him, or the wide variety of family styles that are available to us today. I'm sure that he would be horrified and shocked to learn about some of them, at least. But then after a while, I'm also sure that he would become accustomed to all those different culture patterns that have developed in our own day. Marriage, as Paul celebrates it, is a union between Jesus, the bridegroom, and the church, the bride. And marriage does have problems in today's modern world. But few of the problems that marriage faces today are really the result from social progress. The reason is really rather different. Women and men live longer today, and marriages last today about 4 times as long as they did in the beginning of the last century. It means that if you are married, you can get on one another's nerves a lot more in 48 years than you can in 12. But the same happens to be true of priests and religious. In the old days, priests were in the ministry for about 12 years, and then they died gracefully, a peaceful death. Today we do about 4 recyclings of our ministerial career. This is something that happens to be true as never before in all of humankind. Today also, for married people, not for us, there's much more leisure time. There's more opportunity to search for self-fulfillment in marriage, of all places. And that is why today there are greater expectations for fulfillment in marriage. People today expect a lot more out of their marriages than they ever did a few years ago. Back then, at most, all you expected was to eventually own your own home and possibly furnish it and have 3 meals a day. Today, this is how you begin marriage, apparently. That also happens to be the reason why there's so much disappointment and disillusionment in marriage today. We expect more from marriage today than any other time in the entire history of humankind. Now, Paul, in today's reading, does have part of the answer to the problem for modern marriage. But the answer that he gives, the answers, must be sorted out. First of all, he is providing a kind of household code of the sort that the wise men of the rabbis of the temples gave in his own time. They were just routinely trying to offer advice to their followers. What Paul does today is offer a kind of a household code, which is not anything else than what Ann Landers does today in her columns. Just some common sense observation about the kind of behavior necessary for the people of his time to try to hold a marriage together for 12 years. But the advice that Paul gave was never intended for all times and all places. What was aimed at specifically was the community that Paul was writing for at his own time, in his own culture. But as we know by now, if you paid any attention to Paul and all of his writings, he had the kind of personality in mind that will always leap from one subject to another dramatically and abruptly. And so today, while we listen to him give common sense advice to husbands and wives, we discover that he is also reflecting upon the fundamental nature of marriage union. Yes, of course, he says, husbands and wives should relate to each other in the appropriate style of their own period of history. But they also should realize that the union between them is one of a profound, intimate love that does reflect in a mysterious way the love between Jesus, who is the bridegroom, and the bride, the church, made up of all of us people in whom the spirit of the bridegroom lives constantly. The bridegroom lives in us in an intimate fashion, as a groom dwells in the bride in the marriage union. Now, neither Paul nor Jesus would ever say that social equality for women is unimportant. On the contrary, both Jesus and Paul, both by word and by action, repeatedly indicated that they did believe in the fundamental equality of men and women. It was only later on in the centuries to come, beginning with the Greek culture, that all of this became upset. And then it continued, unfortunately, through the institutional church. It is rather that while equality is able to make the circumstances for love better, equality is never a substitute for loving someone. And equality does not automatically produce love. It just happens that in the past few decades, there are some young people, maybe not quite as many as a while back, who write out a marriage contract before they marry. And in doing so, they are really reviving a very ancient custom. But today they're doing it for different reasons. Today they believe that if they do specify the obligations and the rules and regulations before marriage, that somehow or another they'll avoid in those contracts what they see go wrong in the marriages of older generations. Well, there's really no harm in those kind of contracts, unless the young people today are so naive that they actually would deceive themselves into thinking that more rules and more regulations that are written out and specified beforehand are going to be much help in resolving marriage problems during the next 48 years. Rules and regulations cannot possibly anticipate all the situations that are going to come up in the next half century together. And that's what Jesus says today in the gospel. The letter kills, but the Spirit brings new life. The spirit of a marriage is what counts. And that spirit can be helped. But the kind of discussion that young people do carry on today in preparing that kind of contract. But the contract will not be of much help later on. The spirit of the marriage as it goes on should be the same as the spirit of the love between the bridegroom, who is Jesus, and the bride, who is the church. Unselfish and willing to sacrifice one for the other. That needs constant work, day in and day out. And sacrifice, unselfish love, is never, ever easy. That's why marriage is the most difficult vocation. And that's why, for God's sakes, marry a friend. And don't get married too early if you plan to live 50 or 60 years with the same person. And yet, it still needs to be said, though sometimes one does wonder why, that the important thing about the relationship between a man and a woman is not really who works outside the home and who cleans up the table inside the house, or how family finances are arranged, or how one or two or more careers are going to be harmonized. The important thing is that within the context of all of these freely chosen options, whether the husband and wife are still capable of being unselfish in their concern and their love and their care for one another. Should a wife work? Should she stay home? Should she have children early? Should she have children late? These and all those other questions that so agitate the Sunday newspaper magazines are certainly important, and they need to be worked out between a husband and wife. But far more important is the question of how a woman and a man will grow during their 48 years together, how they will grow in unselfish care and concern and service for one another during all of those years. And if that question is not resolved, then all the other ones really do not make much difference after all. If your marriage were to be judged right now for the quality of unselfish care that you, not your partner, that you bring to it, how do you think it would be rated? How many blessings, and how many torments are found during your 48 years together in that small circle that we call the wedding ring? Thank you.
first two verses of We Stand in Need on page 284. At the offertory, we will sing the third verse.